You're listening to Vatican Radio. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. To mark 2 years since the canonization of St. John the 23rd, on the 27th of April 2014, I thought I'd bring you echoes from the pontificate of this 20th century Pope, who introduced a less formal way of public speaking than was the custom at the time. The story begins on the 11th of October 1962, at the end of a day marking the opening of the Second Vatican Council, when John the 23rd appeared at the window of the Apostolic Palace. According to his secretary, Cardinal Loris Capovilla, he had not planned to appear, but when he noticed the huge expectant crowds gathered below in St. Peter's Square, he felt obliged to respond. Stay tuned and listen to his words in Italian.
Cari figlioli, sento le vostre voci. La mia è una voce sola, ma riassume la voce del mondo intero.
Crowds in St. Peter's Square cheering as Pope John the 23rd invites them to look up at the moon above.
Si direbbe che persino la luna si è affrettata stasera. Osservatela in alto, a guardare a questo spettacolo.
It was the end of an historic day for the Catholic Church, October the 11th, 1962, the opening of the Second Vatican Council. It was also the first time anyone had ever heard a pope speak to them of the moon above, or of their children, tucked up in bed at home, and least of all to hear him casually invite them to give their children a hug and tell them it's from the Pope.
Date una carezza ai vostri bambini e dite questa è la carezza del Papa. Troverete qualche lacrima da asciugare.
I think it's something that people have never forgotten. They still quote it. They still quote it because people were there. They were there. Some of them were there even with children. But, I mean, it was night. It was sort of 8, 9 in the evening. And it was just such a...
What was the atmosphere like?
Oh, it was tremendous. It was so exciting. I mean, we'd been there in the morning. We'd gone home when the council actually opened. We'd been there to see the procession, to see everyone going into St. Peter's, but I was a reporter in the
square. As a young journalist, Jill Tyler reported on the Second Vatican Council for the most popular Catholic newspaper in Britain.
Tremendous crowds. I mean, and we were watching to see when the procession was coming because you couldn't see in front of you something. There were so many people. I mean, there were these photographers saying, go back and get a ladder from the office. Well, I mean, you couldn't have got anything from anywhere because you couldn't get through the crowd. I mean, there were women there with little stools to sit on, and people had been there since early in the morning. You know, I mean, it was very exciting. The evening was a different thing. People came back because there were groups, organisations like Catholic Action that were coming into the square. They were coming with flares. There were flares all round the square, lighting up the square from up on the hill where Propaganda Fide was.
And which is the Janiculum Hill?
Yes, up on the Janiculum Hill.
Could you actually see them?
Yeah, oh yes, you could see the flares. And then, of course, there were these groups that were shouting, long life to the Pope, vita, vita, viva. They were shouting all the time before he even appeared.
The familiar tone Pope John the 23rd used when addressing the crowds came as such a surprise, partly because public speaking in the 1960s was still very formal. To our present-day ears, a Vatican radio broadcast of the time sounds particularly dated.
To the athletes, the special benevolence with which, leaving Castel Gandolfo, he has come to this meeting this evening to greet the multitude of athletes who are taking part in the 17th Olympic Games in Rome.
What you're hearing is an English translation of John the 23rd's speech to participants at the 17th Olympic Games, which were being held in Rome that year.
Twofold good wishes to all taking part. First of all, that every one of them might have a deep realization of their high dignity as athletes.
No no wonder someone as outgoing and spontaneous as John XXIII opted for a more straightforward manner of speech, one that could put him in simple, direct contact with people. The late Count Carlo Cardelli, a member of the papal aristocracy, who'd already met three popes before John XXIII, found this almost astounding forthrightness very striking.
I remember now how he began his address to the Roman nobility. When I had to meet some great man or important people, I sometimes felt shy and anxious on what to say to them. But then I thought, after all, he is only a man like me, but I am a priest, un sacerdote.
Yes, well, he was a man who came of a very solid family. I mean, a family that grew up in the country, but they had, like many people who live in that kind of atmosphere, they seem to be very simple in the way, and their thoughts are, because they're very fundamental. It was just him. He was...
The late Monsignor Carol Abbing, founder of Boys Town, also met John XXIII on various occasions.
In him, he was a man of great solidity in all his things, you say. That solidity can manifest itself in a self-assurance so that do an act of kindness and attach no importance to it. You know, this just sure of himself, this courage of what he believes in and day by day does what he thinks, even as Pope, should be done. I think that marks his whole life because he was put into positions, even in Paris, very, very delicate positions, you see, at very delicate moments. And yet came through, you might say, unscathed in the sense that even with many people wanting to criticise him, it was difficult to do so when you're confronted by straightforwardness and great self-assurance, in the sense sure of his faith, sure of the things that he believed in, sure of his values, you see, without making it offensive in any way.
When I was in the French embassy in Athens, that means from 45 to 50, he was apostolic delegate in Constantinople. So I was in permanent contact with Roncalli in Athens. And then afterwards, when he was appointed nuncio in Paris, I was in the Foreign Office by then. I'd been called back to the Foreign Office. And I remember one day, the Foreign Secretary, who was Robert Schuman, told me, I see all the ambassadors once every 2 or 3 months. I never see the nuncio. I wonder if we've offended him in something since you go.
His Minion father, John Charles Leroux, was in Paris when the future Pope John XXIII was there serving as papal nuncio.
Would you mind in the conversation asking him if there's something, he has something against us? So I knew Roncalli well. I knew it was absolutely useless to take gloves with him. So I told him exactly what Robert Schuman had asked me. And his reply was, oh, but of course there's no offence at all. On the contrary, I know that he's a kind of saint, that most of you in the Foreign Office are very good Catholics, and that therefore the interests of the Church are perfectly defended by you all. So why should I go to the Foreign Office and make you all lose your time? Instead of that, I remain here. I'm rather well paid in Paris. I have an excellent cook. The market of Paris has wonderful products on it. So I combine with my cook 2 or 3 really particularly exquisite meals. And then I take my list of Member of Parliaments and journalists, and I invite the most rabidly opposed to the Church, and I give them a wonderful meal. And you know, I know by experience, because I'm already an old man, that the only profound gratitude in humanity is the gratitude of the stomach. And therefore, from enemies, I make them friends. That was very typical of Roncalli.
While Roncalli, the diplomat, clearly mastered the universal language of the table, he never quite managed to master English, despite valiant efforts.
And now, a word of greeting to our beloved English-speaking children. Aware as we are of your solid piety.
Well, that amused me very much. So I took some of the bishops from Ohio in, and I found myself being the interpreter. And Pope John had a marvellous way with him, you see. He making fun of himself, in a way, apologised, you see, that for not being able to speak to them in English. And then he said, you know, but when next time you come, I hope by then I'll have learned some English. And he said, so I'll be able to. And if not, he said, we'll all meet in heaven. And there, everybody speaks American, you see.
Dei omnipotentis, patris et fili et spiritus sancti descendat super vos et maniat semper.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this very personal feature I put together for you. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.